Sons of Porthos. Wandering in the woods of Mali, Joel has discovered the Marchioness de Montespan and the witch La Bot in a small tumble-down cottage. Here, by sorcery and witchcraft, La Bot is endeavoring to kill Aurore, watched closely by the superstitious Marchioness. With the aid of the incriminating locket given him by Therese Lesage, Joel persuades La Montespan to tell him what she knows, and throwing the locket at her feet, he rushes blindly off along the path towards the summer house to which Aurore has been taken. Suddenly, La Bosse sees a face pressed against the window of the little cottage, and believing it to be some evil spirit called up by her own incantations, she runs screaming from the cottage, the terrified Marchioness after her. Then, from among the trees steps Fouquet the dwarf, wet and bedraggled by the storm, but perky as ever, and behind him, Francoise Daubigny. They step into the cottage and look around.
He's gone, the pair of them. And never a sign left behind them but the cinders of the fire there.
Close the door, Monsieur Foucault, and shut this rain off. Did you see who they were? Was one of them Aurore?
It was hard to see. The little window was so cobwebbed and dirty. I pressed my face against it and peered in with all my eyes, but I couldn't see much. But this I tell you, if Madame de Luxmaria was young and beautiful, then she was not there.
No, of course not. What would she be doing there? And yet, she's not with a hunting party, for I've asked her. What are these women like?
Like two old witches. Old and ugly. Their faces evil and twisted with superstitious fear. Their hair straggling about their faces like Medusa.
It doesn't sound exactly like my lady the Marchioness either. She is tall and stately, beautiful too.
There was no beauty here, madame. And did you see them fly? As if the devil were behind them.
They probably thought you were the devil, monsieur. You are wet through and your face all smeared with mud. Peering through that window, you must have been enough to frighten anyone.
It is a fine thing when one's face frightens even the witches.
Oh, monsieur. They may have thought you a devil. I thought you an angel when you came to my house today. You and Honorin, and the little crippled one. You were lucky to find me, for as I tell you, I've been in hiding, and only crept back today, hoping to find Honorin, had all since your name was after the hunt.
Now the question is, where is Joel? And has he found his dear Aurore? For from all you've told me, and from all I've been able to tell you, it is necessary that he finds her quickly.
Oh, monsieur, indeed it is. For I believe she is surrounded by evil schemers. But there is nothing for us here. So let's go on. I shall not rest until I've found them both.
Wait a moment. What is that? Look. Shining on the floor there.
There. I see nothing.
Over here. See? I'll get it. Oh, why, it's nothing. Nothing but a trinket they dropped in their hurry.
Let me see. Oh, heaven have mercy.
What is it? Do you recognize this bauble?
Yes, monsieur. I recognize it. It belongs to my mistress, the Marchioness de Montespan.
And what does that mean, then?
It means that she was here. One of the witches you saw. So transformed and disfigured by greed and evil that you did not recognize her. Oh, what has he done, monsieur? What has he done with Aurore? Oh, monsieur, my heart is beating. I know her too well. She has such power, such evil power. I am afraid of what she may have done. I am afraid we are too late.
This is the summer house. Now, I must try to remember what Bois Laurier told me. Oh, that I had the brains to realize what he was trying to say. A white-haired man. I should have known. And yet, how could I? But there's no time to waste in regretting now. What did he say? What did he say? What did he say? I must remember. I must remember. I must. Let me think. He said, there is a main room and a fireplace. Yes. And that would be through here. That's right. At least where there is a fireplace. With enough carving to hide 100 secret springs. Now, where did he say the spring was? Hidden in the brass knob, concealed on the right. Or was it the left? I must look. I cannot see any brass knob. Oh, heaven, guide my fingers. For there is so little time, so little time. Wait. I must remember. The brass knob concealed. That's right, he said. In the panel. Yes, the panel. I remember now. There are panels on both sides. I'll run my hands over them. Perhaps I may chance on it. There is nothing. Nothing in either of them. I must think. I must remember. He said in the panel, the brass knob concealed in the panel on the... Oh, was it the right or the left of the fireplace? Oh, give me power to think. For all life depends on this. There's so little time. The right or the left.
It's on the left, monsieur.
Huh? You!
Colonel Corbus, the leader of the Royal Marauders. Remember?
How could I forget?
At your service, monsieur.
It seems I have met you several times since the incident on the Summer Road. Once near the cathedral, once in Bundy Forest.
Monsieur has a good memory, except the secret spring.
But you are going to tell me where that is.
Certainly. It is in the panel on the left of the fireplace, on a level with your sword hilt, just where that carved rose hangs down its head. Oh, it's easy to find when you know, monsieur.
Why do you tell me this? Why do you help me so?
I believe one must do what one can for the dying. Oh, monsieur, what do you think I am? I'm not helping you anywhere, except out of this world, and that right smartly.
I wish I could stay, but Aurora is more precious to me even than mine honor, and I must go to her.
Ah, you innocent Breton. You think when you were standing so conveniently close, I would have told you the right place to look? Come now, draw your sword, or I'll pin you to the wall without more ado.
Very well. I see I must spare the time to kill you.
Try it, monsieur.
I'll waste no time, I warrant you.
You have little time to waste, monsieur, if you wish to save your wife.
Do not think to taunt me into forgetting my guard, monsieur. I am too experienced a swordsman for that.
Yet I warrant I could taunt you into such a rage if I chose to tell you all I know.
I know all I need to know.
Perhaps. She is very lovely, Madame de Locmaria. I've always thought so, as you may remember.
Such lips as yours are not fit to have her name upon them. Hold your tongue, then, before I silence it forever.
I, too, am an experienced swordsman. There's no doubt you're a discovery. Besides, you must be tired. You're wet through. Looks as if you've ridden all night. While I am fresh and delighted, monsieur, to have the opportunity of getting even with you. Besides, my master will pay me well for it.
I have always found, monsieur, the man who talks most dies the soonest. Like this, monsieur. I call that the thrust of Porthos. Just one thing I wish. I wish you had told me this real secret of this panel before you died, for on my sword I wasted more time than I...
But look. In falling, he has knocked against the panel and the door has opened. My thanks, Monsieur Corbus. The secret that you would not tell me in life, you've revealed in death. Now to Aurora, and God grant that I may not be too late.
While Joel has been detained in the summer house by Corbus, while he has fought with him and finally killed him, In a room in the Chateau Marly, the Duke of Almada stands looking down on the unconscious form of Aurore. Unaware of the failure of any of his plans, he smiles gently at the servant standing quietly beside him. Gently and triumphantly.
Indeed, she is beautiful. It makes me wish I were a little younger. Well, Esteban, so this is the end of the path. The triumph. We have what we wanted.
Yet they say her husband is still alive, my lord.
True, true. But that is a small matter. To be sure, I wished him dead. But since he is not, we must make the best of it. Certainly he is alive and worships her. And she him. But what of it? He is not here. Believe me, a siege is a slow business. He will be away some time. Besides, this very affection they bear each other provides me with a weapon against them. Either would brave anything to save the other from harm.
Yes, my lord. I see what you mean.
Oh, but I'm tired, Esteban. Get me a chair.
Here, my lord.
Oh, thank you. And suppose, Esteban, just suppose that all this is vile and odious. These plans of mine,
No one would suggest that, my lord. The end must justify the means.
That is what I say, Esteban. But I'm an old man and tired. And conscience grows active when one grows old. I ask myself, what would D'Artagnan have said of my scheming? Or Athos? Or Porthos?
I do not know these names, my lord.
No, no, Esteban. They're all dead now. They called me Aramis.
Aramis?
It was a long time ago, my friends. But sometimes when I am tired, I wonder what they would say if they could know me now. Aramis, the prelate and the conspirator, the man who has juggled with the crown and scepter of France, acting the spider. At the end, it justifies the means. He will come to love the king. She will have power and influence most women crave. And with her in such a position of power, then I too have power. And I may put the pen in Louis's hand, and he will write such orders as I desire.
You are tired, my lord. I will leave you now. Rest a little until His Majesty arrives.
Yes, I will do that.
I will advise His Majesty you are waiting.
The end, he says, justifies the means. What does the mud upon the road or the twig snapped underfoot matter to him who reaches the summit? What does any one person matter in comparison with the cause I champion? And yet no, I do but play a game and deceive myself with fine phrases. Let's be honest. It is power for myself I want. Power! And what was that? Surely I cannot be mistaken. There is someone in the passage below. It must be Corbus, of course. Who else could it be? Is that you, Corbus?
No, my lord. It is I.
Dunn of Porthos, adapted for radio by Margaret Dunn from the novel by Alexandre Dumas, a George Edwards production.